It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
And welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I am Gene Bolduc, your host, and my guest today is the one, the only, the Orange County special, Penny Rich. Penny Rich, how are you? Happy New Year. I haven't talked to you this year.
Oh, wow, that's right. Look at that. I can't believe it.
Yeah. It's so wonderful to see you. You look, you know, basically the same as last year.
I think so. I mean, it was a few weeks ago. No, that's quite all right. Yeah, I'm doing okay. I mean, we made it through this, our first ice storm. So, you know, right? Yeah, it was good. I mean, we did all the prep work and then we could let the water out of the bathtub. So we were good.
Okay. I just want to say, not to brag. Okay. To brag. I had all the devices charged up.
Yep.
We collected, our bathtub would leak out a little bit. I could fill the bathtub tonight, tomorrow morning, it'd be empty.
Oh.
So what we do is, and here's a little pro tip for anybody who's listening. You know those wonderful 5-gallon buckets at Home Depot that often you can get them with paint in them, but you can also just get the empty bucket for various uses. I have about 5 of those that I use for different things. And we keep 3 of them available at all times across the winter so that, because we have well and septic, you know what that means?
Yeah.
It means no power is no flushing.
That's right.
And so we collect water in those and sit them in the bathtub. They're out of the way.
Sure.
And they don't leak. We fill those up. And of course you can fill up all your large pots and your Dutch oven and whatever. You can fill everything in sight with water when you have it. So we did all that. We made sure we had batteries and flashlights and a candle here and there, but I don't like to use candles very much.
Yeah.
They can be a little bit of a, you know, recipe for disaster.
Yep.
We made sure we had salt for the deck because we knew it was going to be icy. And what else?
Fireplace? You know, do you have a fireplace?
I'm sorry?
You have a fireplace?
Yes. We have a fireplace and a wood stove. Yes.
Oh, so
we went and got a load of wood from my son's house. Because they have like entirely too much seasoned wood. And so we went and got a load of firewood. And so we said, that's it. We're all set. And I truly believe that because of that, we never lost power.
Yeah.
I really believe that's why, because we were ready. And we will be this weekend when, you know, the next storm comes along. I don't know if it's named yet, but that was Winter Storm Izzy. Probably the next one will be Winter Storm Gene.
Do we name winter storms now? Is that a new thing?
They do. They do. When I don't know what the criteria is for naming the storm. Sometimes they're just weather events and sometimes they're named winter storms. And that was Winter Storm Izzy. Like, is he going to drop a foot of snow or is he isn't?
Yeah. It was pretty for a little while. And then I was like thinking like, oh my God, this is just not going to be good. But we crossed our fingers, right? Just like you. Tell us a little bit. You and I were talking a little bit about trees before, but tell us a little bit about your trees.
Well, I'm going to tell you my tree story. And the name of the story is 1-2-Tree.
Oh boy.
So you remember New Year's weekend? When that kind of weird and intense thunderstorm blasted through the county.
Yeah.
About a month before that, let me back up and first tell you that about a month before that, I glanced skyward on my front porch, one of those days when it was 70 and probably shouldn't have been. I looked up and I saw that a branch, a big, big tree limb from my probably 60-year-old maple tree had broken off high up in the tree, like 50, 60 feet in the air, and was resting in limbs that were lower down in the tree, smaller limbs. And this was directly over the sandbox where my grandchildren love to hang out and play with trucks and whatnot. And so I'm out there watching the kids play. I look up and, you know, it was like watching an incoming meteor or something. I, you know, told the kids, you know, come on up here real quick. I want to show you something. So they came up on the deck and I said, you see that up there? That's why you can't play in the sandbox anymore. Because I don't know when that fell. I don't know when it's going to fall the rest of the way to the ground.
Sure.
A couple of years ago, we had a limb off this same tree fall on the house and impale itself into our roof, which is how it was that right then is when we got the new roof. You know, it busted through the roof and was stuck in there just sticking up and saying, you know, maybe you need a roof. So we got a new roof, and we've had limbs and whatnot trimmed off of this tree. You know, we're good Chapel Hill folk. We don't like cutting down a tree. I live on a heavily wooded lot, and this is a big, gorgeous maple tree. It's a sugar maple tree.
Mm.
And, you know, in about mid-October, there is not a thing in this world that is more beautiful than this tree.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I see this limb. So we get a couple of tree guys. They come out, they give us an estimate. And this is right at the front of the house. This is not 15 feet from the front of the house. So they're going to have to go up in the tree, cut it apart in sections, and lower those sections down with ropes. And this is not an operation for the homeowner to try.
No. Yeah, that's, you know, how you're prefacing that. That's, you know, interesting that you say that.
We have a chainsaw and all that. My husband thinks he's Paul Bunyan sometimes, but, you know, this is not an operation for a do-it-yourself operation. So they give us a date that they're going to come, and it's like right before New Year's, and then the guy doesn't show up. And so then we get another guy, and while we're waiting for all of this to work out in the scheduling, this storm comes through that Sunday of New Year's weekend. And I woke up at maybe 5 a.m. and I heard this large boom sound.
Crash. Oy.
Well, you know, I'm embarrassed to tell you the truth about this, but I tell you the truth. So here's the truth. I thought, wow, that sounded like my son got up during, you know, early in the morning and fell down in the hallway. It was like this big thud. It was like that. Except it was a little bigger than that.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I don't hear him saying, "Help, my leg is broken," you know, or anything. So I went back to sleep. So I got up that Monday, went to the front door because the grandchildren were arriving. And if you ever need to know what's what, you just need to ask a four-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
I opened the front door, and I promise you, this is the God's honest truth of exactly what he said. I opened the front door. He extends his arms out to his side, and he says, "There's a huge tree out here that fell down in your yard, and if it hit this house, you would be dead." And I said, "Well, happy new year to you too, sweetheart. How are you feeling?" I'm like, "Wow, what are you talking about? I didn't know this. I didn't know that a tree fell in the yard, but yeah. I sure heard it. It turned out."
Yeah, you did hear it. Yeah.
I come out on the porch. I'm looking at the maple tree thinking, well, it's finally happened. Oh no, it's over here. This pine tree on the other side of the front yard. This tree, also about 60 feet tall, was snapped off about 20 or 30 feet up the trunk of the tree, not unrooted. What do you call that? What am I trying to say? It did not come
uprooted.
Out.
Isn't it uprooted?
It was not uprooted. Thank you.
Yeah.
I knew it was a direction.
Yeah, it
was not uprooted like we saw so often in Hurricane Fran, for example. Sure. We had many of those in the yard after Fran. It was snapped off in the trunk.
Yeah.
The tree landed trunk first in the ground with such force that it threw mud up on the side of the house.
Wow.
Which I called tree vomit.
Wow.
And then fell. And let me say again, this is like a 60-foot pine tree.
Yeah.
Fell right along in front of the house. How it missed every single inch of this house, I do not know.
Yeah.
But this was a hot mess.
Yeah.
This was a hot mess. So while we're all busy watching this little limb on the maple tree, this thing gets pulled up by Dorothy, Toto, and everybody else.
Sure.
And dropped on the other side of the front yard.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was beyond shocked. Beyond
those scare me, those big pines, because they can snap. I mean, and
they
can. Telling us the story.
So,
and,
you so know, they came out and looked at the other two pines that are also in the front.
Gotta go.
And I said, what do you guys think about these? Because, you know, if you tell me I need to take a bulldozer to this whole front yard, I'm doing it.
Right.
The way I feel right now. You see these little kids? Yeah. I would just do, oh my God, I was just freaked out. Well, they said that those trees are fine.
Okay.
But that if we took down any of the other trees that are in the front yard, which of which there are many, 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 that we'd have to take down these pine trees because there's nothing to protect them. And I'm thinking, I don't really care about protecting those pine trees.
Right.
I care about protecting the house.
And the children. Yes.
And the children. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean, please.
Because we try to convince the children that as long as they're inside, they're perfectly safe. Mm-hmm. So then my grandson was explaining that we can go downstairs into the garage, which is, you know, we have a partial basement. So, and he says, we would be perfectly safe in there, J-Mar.
Perfectly fine.
Perfectly safe. And when a four-year-old tells you that, you better believe it.
Right.
You better believe it.
Right.
So that was my whole tree story.
Yeah. Well, what's the end game, though? You didn't tell us. What did you take down? So we got one that snapped.
So the guy came out. We took down the maple tree, which, by the way, we learned after he took it down, was very, very diseased. The inside of it was very hollowed out.
Sure. Yeah.
And I felt really good about taking that tree down.
Yeah.
Last Wednesday, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. Last Wednesday, before the winter storm event. Yeah. And then they cut up the rest of that. Rick cut up some of the pine tree just to take it apart a little bit, but they took it all apart, took it all away. And anything that was small enough to fit into a chipper, they chipped. So we have this big mountain of tree chips.
Okay.
Lots of mulch.
Lots of mulch for the spring. All right.
Lots of mulch for the spring. So all's well that ends well. Nobody hurt.
Wow.
Not one penny of insurance coverage because it didn't touch the house. We're like, I don't know, maybe on the corner, you know, no. You know, and you know, from the insurance company's point of view, so let's see, you live on a lot where you probably have 500 trees and one of them fell down and you want us to pay you for what?
Yeah. It's expensive.
To damage your house.
It's expensive to get rid of trees. I mean, you know, I've known people, if you remember during the ice storm a couple of years back, there was a tree that fell right across Franklin Street.
Yes.
And it was a friend of mine's, and he had no choice. He had to get that tree off of Franklin Street because it blocked Franklin Street. It cost him a fortune because it was on his property and then it fell and it was his.
Well, and you know, during Fran, our next door neighbors had a tree that fell out of their yard across our driveway and landed on our house. And then we learned it became our tree. Congratulations.
You've given birth to a new tree.
Because it landed on the house, the insurance paid for all of it to be cut up and removed. And they told us in this case, if it had landed on the driveway, anywhere on the driveway, they would have paid for it.
Ah, geez. That's
but, you
your
know,
free story. Okay.
My car was in the driveway, so I think I'm okay that it didn't.
Welcome
land
to 2022. There.
There
you go.
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly. Happy New Year. Yeah, Happy New Year. Here's a tree for you. Okay, well, we're past our time for our break, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about, anything else that's going on.
Oh,
there's not much. We know there's not much going on. We're talking to Penny Rich here at the Weekend Water Cooler, and we'll be back shortly. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back with Penny Rich, and we're now that we've covered trees, which are very important things in our beloved community. But I have to tell you, I understand a lot more about why people really don't want them near the house, and it's partly experience and it's partly just getting older and going, wait, what if that happens? Anyway, speaking of what if this calamity happens, let's talk about the upcoming election cycle, Penny.
Wow.
You have just given me an update a few minutes ago about the latest mischief that's going on. Please, please do bring us all up to speed about where we are now on this, what would you call it? Runaway train that is our redistricting mapping.
Sure. Yeah.
Mischievous process.
Yeah. So let's say to start with, this is North Carolina. We're not talking about federal elections right now, although
right.
We have folks up for Congress and Senate seats. So
right.
It does affect federally, but this is what electing from North Carolina. Originally, right. We had a March primary, and you know, that was changed years ago because in the presidential right. primary, the Republicans wanted to have the
2016.
Yeah.
You're saying years ago, early. Like it's a long time. It was just right. 2016, right?
Right. So they could be a player in the national, right. on the national stage. So our primaries were in March, but they drew these ridiculous maps. I mean, if you look at, I think Greensboro is probably the worst, where they broke it down into three sections. So they would, you know, they're just taking the voting rights away from people. This is one of the ways to do it is to district, especially African-American people out. So they put a poll them all away from, so they can get more Republicans in there, right? Because traditionally right. African-Americans will vote Democratic, but yeah, I don't want to paint with a broad stroke, but that's it. So there was a lawsuit, went in front of a three-judge panel. The three-judge panel, even though they agree that it was a political redrawing of the maps, they didn't make them redo the maps. In the meantime, though, while that happened, the General Assembly went and said, okay, well, let's delay the primary from March until May. So currently it's May 17th is when the primary is. It gave time for the lawsuits to clear. And then if they needed to change anything, they could, as far as maps are concerned. You and I both know that the Republicans have drawn many sets of maps. So the idea that right. they need time to redraw another map, as far as I am concerned, is a lot of skunk. So what we have now is an appeal. The three-panel judge went to the Supreme Court of North Carolina, and they're going to most likely come up with a vote and may overturn the three-panel judge. In that case, the Republicans will need to show new maps. In the meantime, they are now saying they would like to push the primary off to June 7th, which can change by the time the water cooler comes on this weekend. But right now it's June 7th, and we both know that this is not for the redrawing of the maps. This is to try and line up people to run in those districts that they're going to redraw.
Do you think they're having trouble attracting candidates?
You know, I often think about that. What does that mean, attracting candidates? And do they have people lined up ready? It's hard to say. I know that they're trying to do their darndest to get their message out. The Democrats don't do a very good job of that. I don't know if it's difficulty getting candidates, or they're just so... like you and I talked a little bit, they love the chaos. The chaos of it all is just very confusing to voters. Like if you ask anyone right now when the primary is, even in Orange County here, they're not going to be able to tell you the date because it's
changed. Oh, no right. way. Right, right.
Right. Unless you're a political nerd like us, you don't know that, right? You don't know that. What's
well, going and, on. And also the delay until May, if I understand correctly, means that the filing period has not yet even reopened.
That's correct. The filing period reopens on February 24th. Okay. Wow. That was originally when early voting was supposed to be taking place. So let's talk a little bit about that, though, also, as we move forward. So now it's May 17th, and most colleges are out the first week in May.
Gone.
The graduation right. and the students are gone. So this once again disenfranchises our students. If it's May 17th, they'll be able to get in there for early voting. Right. If not, if it goes to June, we have a good chance that students will not be here. They might have gone home. They might have been traveling. You know, any number of things happens with students during summer break. Some of them will be here. So that leads them to not even early voting anymore. They have to do absentee voting.
Right.
And so that puts another level of confusion in, right? If you're used to just going.
And they have to know that to do it. Right. And at this moment, they wouldn't know that because it's quicksand.
That's right.
It's informational quicksand that they're standing on.
Right.
That's not just, obviously not just Chapel Hill, but that's statewide. And, you know, college students tend to be progressive, I'll just say.
Absolutely.
They're young.
Right.
They're not going to trend Republican. Right. And I'm very, very sure that our good friends on the other side of the aisle are quite aware of that and are very happy to kick this out until they probably like to, you know, kick it out to July 15th if they could do it.
Yeah.
And, just to be sure.
Sure. Yeah. Interesting. I talked to Jerry Cohen about this a while back, and we all know Jerry is like one, again, political nerd, but he's very much involved in, you know, making sure that everybody gets to vote. Doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. He likes when people come out and vote.
Right.
And he cited that at one point that because of such confusion, there was a primary that didn't happen until September.
Lord have mercy. I can't imagine.
Think about that for everybody that's working on these campaigns. I mean, it's really difficult to keep up that keep going on a campaign. You know, you set your campaign up and you know, here's what I have to do this month, the next month. You set your timeline up, you set your communications up, you set everything up that you have to do. When they throw the wrench in it, it really just blows everyone away. And you got to remember, a lot of the volunteers for our campaigns around here are students.
Right.
Know, if they are gone, we lose that whole force of people that are so involved with these campaigns. It's really disruptive, Gene. And I agree with you. I think our friends across the aisle absolutely know what they're doing. It's conniving. It's manipulative. And it's concerning. It's really concerning.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a clear indicator of the, I just don't know another term to use, the extreme damage that's been done to the Republican Party. You may not know this, and please don't hang up on the call when I tell
you this, but
I was a Republican a long time ago. When I was, you know, when I first registered to vote, I was registered as a Republican. And this is nothing like, you know, by the way, you know, we'll come back and talk about this a little more. By the way, part of my positioning about that had to do with keeping the government out of my uterus because I thought that was a legit conservative view that the government has no role in my exercise of my rights to control my own body and my family and all of that. That's a for real, legitimate conservative view that has completely gotten lost over the years. And of course, a lot of things about what it was to be, you know, a moderate conservative person have just disappeared. They've just disappeared from the party. And it's entirely now about we're white, we're rich, we're powerful, we should be in charge, and you don't need other reasons. Can't you see I'm white? I just can't see much of anything else going on, frankly, in the party. There's no position that you can name that is legitimately held by the GOP at almost any level of government. And with that wacky broad brush, we'll take a quick break.
Quick break.
And if we're still on the air, we'll be back in just a moment with Penny Rich. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back with Penny Rich, and I'm gonna reach back to this Bill Clinton quote from many years ago. He was on Morning Joe, and he said, you know, he was asked about what's going on? What is the problem in current day politics? And he was out of the presidency at this point. And he said, well, the problem is that the very things that make for good government, which is hearing the other guy out, you know, whatever his position is, even if you don't agree with it, respectfully listening to the other guy's point of view, and trying to find common ground and cooperating where you can, compromising where it's possible to come to a middle ground that will serve the most people in the best way. The very things that make good government make for bad television.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what's wrong in the political process, because conflict equals viewers on television,
that's right,
clicks online, headlines in the paper. And of course, now this is before social media was so prominent,
right,
that he said all of this. And I've never forgotten that, because, man, that just could not be more correct.
That, oh, especially, you know, today.
Who wants to watch a school board where everybody's saying, well, you know, Bob, I don't agree with you about that, but let's talk through, you know, why do you think we should ban those five books? What is it about them that you're concerned about? And that he might have legitimate concerns about kids who are reading material that's too young for them, that they're too young for. And, well, okay, let's deal with that problem instead of banning a book.
Right.
Because that just seems so extreme. So how about if we make sure that they have a parental permission slip to take out those five books? How about if we find a place in the middle that will alleviate your concerns?
Sure.
Instead of making you the bad guy that you want to ban books and ripping you to pieces on Facebook.
Right.
Who's gonna watch that school board meeting? Nobody. Nobody's right. gonna raise money off of that.
Nope.
And
nope.
All of these considerations.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's all this shock and the media attention.
Right.
And that's what's wrong with some of our politicians also. I mean, if you look at a Manchin and Sinema, that it's all about they're on the front stage right now, right? And it's hard to give up that power. I mean, it's not sensible power, but that's what, I mean, no one heard of Kristen Sinema before this all started, right? She was just a senator from, well, she, I shouldn't say just, she was and is a senator from Arizona, but I wouldn't have known her name. I wasn't paying attention to her. I pay attention to my North Carolina senators. I pay attention to some senators that are, you know, leading, but we wouldn't have known who she is. Now it's all for show with her. She looks like she is dressing. And, you know, and I'm not picking on how the woman appears, but she's really doing it to be in the front of the stage.
And she wants to. Yeah, she wants to. She's always been that way, to be fair. But she really always wants to be camera ready.
She wants to be camera ready. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I could name off many, many senators, distinguished, excellent United States senators who they were the frumpy guy with the tie not quite straight ever,
right.
But they did great work. They did
work. Work is the key here, right? Because what I find is with the Republican Party, even in North Carolina, they're not working. They're just trying to throw wrenches in everything that anyone wants to do. And if it doesn't line up or agree with this sort of like, white power that's going on right now.
Right.
You're just pushed to the side, and it's just really not good. I mean, it gets us to like the filibuster, which is one of the most racist things that it is not in the Constitution. I can't believe we can't work around the filibuster because like, it's just, it's not part of our government.
Well, and here's the thing about the filibuster. They get around it just fine when they want to. They got around it just fine with the debt ceiling.
Sure.
With various other votes that were absolutely, absolutely critical to avoid shutdown and all of those things, that was the right thing for them to do. But the fact that they can, with the quick swipe of a pen, because it keeps the trains running on time, they get around it just fine. But somehow, for voting rights, it's just a bridge too far.
Oh, it's a bridge.
This is the thing. It's just, I've pointed this out before, and I'm going to beat this drum just 1 minute longer. It's not just that Sinema and Manchin are putting themselves in front of the cameras by saying, oh, I don't think I can. It's also that Richard Burr and Tom Tillis and mm-hmm. every other Republican pays no penalty for saying, no, I would never support that.
Right.
There's no problem. We just assume that 50 Republicans are going to say thumbs down to securing voting rights and ensuring that elections are free and fair, elections that are run at the state level that cannot be overturned by the whim of a state legislature, that they cannot be, I'm sorry to use the term, rigged to support the outcome like was desired by the previous guy, the former guy, the FG, as I like to call him.
Sure.
You know, they are working on this, and that's what they're trying to put into place. And these two laws would sweep away the measures that have happened at the state level this year. And if they don't get these laws passed, our ability to determine who our president is going to go away. It really is. This can really happen.
It can happen, and it will happen. And this is this is.
And they're promising us that it will happen.
They are, exactly, Gina, are telling us what they are going to do. They're not hiding what they're going to do. North Carolina General Assembly Republicans never hid what they were going to do. They told you. They created the worst possible maps they possibly could because they knew they would be challenged, right? So then they can come up with the second set or the third set that they have in the back room and say, oh, okay, well, we'll do this instead. No. That's not what they did. They gave us the worst because they know how to play this game. And this is what's going to happen with all around the country if we allow voting
to go and by the dodge list. And dodge and delay is really what they're doing. It's not so much the maps. They know those maps are not going to withstand scrutiny. The delay, you know, it's like about Trump's, the former guy's, policy at the border, you know, the quote from Stephen Miller, the cruelty is the point. That's the point of the policy. Right. He just overtly said, listen, the cruelty is the point, because if people know that they're going to go through this terrible experience, then they won't try to come here. And this is how they attempted to achieve that outcome, to deter people from coming across the border illegally, was to make it such an inhuman experience that they would avoid it. And they just straight up said so. And you just, you hear it and you can't believe it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, but that's right. They'll just tell you, you know, I'm about to beat you unfairly and illegally, but that's what I'm doing.
Right.
And that's what they do.
You know, the former guy is doing these sort of rallies right now, and he's coming out and telling everybody what the plan is. You know, go after the secretaries of state. Make sure that you get a Republican in every state Secretary of State. We have Elaine Marshall, so we're hoping that she, crossing our fingers, that she stays there. But that he is telling you what the plan is. Wake up, people. Listen to what they're saying, because they don't hide anything.
And watch what they're doing. They created these forged documents of five states of totally bogus documents claiming to offer these electors. And you know, if you don't know about this, you need to Google it and watch Rachel Maddow's coverage of this, because she's been all over this.
Yeah.
Like excuse the expression, please, like white on rice. She's been all over this. They put together these forged documents from a template that was given to them by people very high up in the former guy's administration, saying, here's how to create this document. And five states put forward these documents, and elected officials signed them and sent them to Washington and tried to get not certified electors counted as the proper electors. And if Mike Pence had played along with that,
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't even know where we'd be. But I'll tell you where we are now. We're at the spot where we have to take another break. This is so much fun. I love talking to Penny Rich about the down and dirty of politics at every
down level. And dirty.
Dog Catcher's Race is up next. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back. We're talking to Penny Rich. And we're going to finish up, you know, just talking about these elections. I follow this pretty well, I think. Every time I talk to you, it seems like there's some curveball that's come in from outer space. I have to just say, because you won't say this, but I'll say it for you. I get emails and newsletters and updates from you. I follow you on social media. I kind of see what your campaign is about. I see what you're doing, I guess is a way of putting it. The Register of Deeds race, which you're going to enter as soon as you get a filing period that will open up.
As soon as I can, yeah.
You've been very open about that.
I have.
I don't hear anything from the incumbent. I'll just say that. And, you know, we're both in the same political party, and I would have thought that I would have heard something from him by now. But I mean, I'm looking around. I'm just not seeing. I'm not hearing. I'm like, he's still in the state, right? He is still around. He who shall not be named.
Yeah.
I have sort of a baseline requirement of appreciating when people offer themselves for public office at any level. I've done it myself. I wasn't elected. There were many, many days following that when I was extremely grateful for not being elected. but I will tell you, it's hard. It's hard to lose. It's hard to win. And I appreciate anybody who offers themselves in good faith to run for public office. And that includes you many times over. Despite disappointments, you know, saying, well, maybe I can, I'll offer myself for this thing instead and I'll do a good job. And here's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And no, that's what you want. It's important. That's what I want.
That's
here's
right.
What I'm going to do.
That's right. There's the folks that are running for office right now and are stymied by this, the fumbling of when we're going to have a primary. I think, you know, everyone's working really hard. Let's not forget that. So every time you get pushed back or you don't, you know, you got a plan, and then the plan is not going to work because you got 2 or 3 months more, and you got to keep your staff up, and you've got to keep everyone running. But you know, the goal is when you're running for office is to explain why you're running for office. And the Register of Deeds is an interesting position because no one actually knows what the Register of Deeds office does, but it is probably one of the most important offices in any county because you have to get every kind of certificate, marriage certificate, death certificate. You know, when you get released from the military, when you buy a house, when you change your business name, these are all things the Register of Deeds does. So it's really important to make sure that people understand that. And that's what my website has been doing. That's what I've been talking to folks about, having a really, really good time talking to people, as well as Register of Deeds in other counties who have been extremely, extremely helpful. What the Register of Deeds doesn't do is not be present. And it's really so important to be present and help other, for me, I'm a Democrat. I want to help other Democrats win office. I want to make sure that, you know, when I get elected, that I have a good team behind me, that my legislators are going to call me when they need me to do something, that I can call them. It's really important for us to support each other and never stray away from that. And, you know, I can't say that about everyone that is currently in office.
I think that was stated very diplomatically, I have to say. I will tell you that, you know, I had a death in my family this year. And when you need vital records, you really need them.
Yeah.
You need it to work. This is like DMV plus, you know, when you really need it, you really need it. So I certainly wish and hope that all goes well in your race whenever it gets kicked off finally.
Whenever.
But folks, you know, keep your ear to the ground and try to follow this. follow Penny on social media. She'll keep you straight on what's going on here. And of course, if you're going out this weekend, thank you very much, Penny Rich, for being on our program.
Oh, you bet. Anytime, Jean.
Always. A lot of
Oh, yeah.
And folks, if you're going out this weekend, you know the deal. If you're going out, mask up. And if you're staying in, keep it right here on 97.9 The Hill.
Follow Jean on Twitter at Jean Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.